Welcome to the Make or Miss podcast. This is an emergency DeAndre Jordan blows up the internet edition. I'm going to be joined in a moment by Ben Dowsett of Salt City Hoops, Basketball Insiders, B-Ball Breakdown, places like that. We're both packing for Summer League, so this is going to be kind of a short one. Just kind of wanted to get some quick DeAndre Jordan thoughts and all the ridiculousness around the situation. So, hey, Ben, how's it going? It's kind of been a crazy day. I don't know about you, but I was expected to be productive today, and instead I was just glued to Twitter like everyone else as we saw emojis and ridiculous claims and breaking news and Woj sneaking a pen camera through a vent in DeAndre Jordan's house to tell us what was going on.
And Blake Griffin tweeting pictures from inside the house.
Like, that was amazing. I'm sorry. If you didn't think that was funny, then we can't be friends.
Oh, I definitely laughed at that. No, I was expected to be productive today, and I was, but I guess more slowly than I would have been expected to be because, yeah, I was staring at Twitter basically the whole time.
So, if you haven't heard and you've been under a rock, the NBA has been under a moratorium on signings, which has been honored kind of more by the breach over the last week as we've had crazy free agent, quote, signings, even though nothing can actually be agreed. And that kind of leads to the problem, which, you know, having agreed, air quotes, since by league rules he can't actually have agreed, DeAndre Jordan had second thoughts about going to the Mavericks, and the Clippers, understandably, if ethically questionably, and that's an open question, I don't want to prejudge either way. I mean, that's a sticky wicket, I think. He pounced and kind of hung out of his house until he was able to sign a contract at 12:01 Eastern this morning. That's as neutral as I can state the facts as we know them.
I think that's a pretty good job. And, you know, I don't actually think that what the Clippers themselves did is that ethically – I mean, maybe it's a slight gray area, but, I mean – I have issues with what DeAndre did, and we'll get into that. But once you know that that's a possibility and it's within the rules, sure, it's a little dirty, but what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to just let the guy go? Because we know they have no replacement for him if they can't re-sign him.
And it's an unwritten rule, but it's the written rule is being so openly flaunted that I've been banging this drum for days, more with respect actually to the Kings trade with the 76ers.
Yeah.
That's can't be official yet, so it's, and maybe they should think about just not doing it. But it's kind of a similar argument. It didn't actually happen, so it didn't actually happen when it comes right down to it. And obviously, I know where you're gonna go with this, but I think the first thing we can say is kind of the way the moratorium operates right now is ridiculous. And they basically were begging for something like this. They being the league was basically begging for something, maybe not this exact scenario, but something very much like this was, I think, inevitable.
We're in full agreement on that one. And you think about it, I was just thinking about this before we got on the call here. The potential ramifications were nothing to be done, which I think it's pretty clear. We saw a tweet from Mark Stein earlier. I think it's pretty obvious something is going to happen as a result of this. Like, there's going to be some changes made to the moratorium, or it might just not exist anymore. But if it didn't, let's just say the same system stayed in place next year. It sounds kind of nuts, but you could have – if you had a player that's really devoted to a certain franchise, certain GM, and he's a restricted free agent, you could even be going so far as to have guys feigning interest in another team and tying up their cap space while signing to sign a tender of some kind, or even a non-restricted free agent, like kind of like DeAndre, like, and you think of them almost as like a secret agent for the initial GM, which that sounds nuts, but at the same time, earlier today, I would have said a team essentially, I'm not going to say holding hostage, but a team essentially barricading themselves in a player's house. Whatever happened today, I don't want to qualify it too outlandishly, but whatever happened today, I think you would have called that crazy 24 hours ago,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, the whole barricaded thing, we'll find out much more about this in the coming days, because the story is going to have the hell reported out of it, obviously.
Yeah.
We're going to find out that what happened is like, hey, guys, thanks for coming and talking to me. You want to hang out until this is over. That's kind of, it would shock me if anything besides that kind of happened, you know.
It would probably be illegal if too much more than that happened. Oh, yeah. We might be getting into issues with the police. So
yeah, no, I mean, no, like Mary Henderson, who's the wife of Mavs blogger Kirk Serious Face, at Kirk Serious Face on Twitter,
okay.
Kirk Henderson. He she wrote a piece for, you know, as this was going on, she's an attorney, and wrote a piece that like if actually it was, you know, they legitimately were like holding him in there, it like implicates the RICO statute, you know, the thing that goes after the mobsters. So it's not, and that's funny. And there's a conversation to be had about kind of how much of the narrative was driven by, a single tweet where, you know, Woad said, they're not letting him leave or something like that, that's a kind of another topic, but how much of kind of the narrative around this is driven by that just image, which is just like, whoa, you know, it's all of a sudden we're in the negotiator and Samuel L. Jackson is in there, you know.
I'll admit, I got a little bit like wound up in when, right, I know the exact Woj tweet you're talking about, and kind of as everything was going crazy, I fell into that trap just a little, and then kind of thought about it and was like, wait, a group of NBA players are not holding another NBA player hostage in his own home. And that's when I started to craft my thoughts about DeAndre more specifically, because I am not really a huge fan of the way he handled this whole thing, even understanding that young men do at times make mistakes. As a former young man myself, I know. But
You even any older than DeAndre? I don't know how old you are, but are you, like, he's 20.
How old is he?
He's 26.
Well, I turned 27 on Saturday.
Oh, okay. So,
so
the wisdom of a year is what.
Yep.
Yeah. So, and I think that there are some very legitimate concerns to the way that, you know, DeAndre handled this. I mean, it's an ethical, moral kind of, and this is something, again, I've been kind of struggling with this in the concept of, the concept of kind of, should the Kings, since they are technically allowed to, you know, go back on that deal, and I'm not sure how I feel about it. Like, at the one hand, it's like, it's, yes, scummy, but on the other hand, what's the grace period on living with a mistake when you haven't actually committed, when in kind of legal terms, you haven't committed to it? And I know what you're going to say to this, is that, you know, other things have been done kind of to pile up on top of this, right?
Yeah, but I actually, before we got to that, I was planning on asking you what your thoughts on this were, and from both of us, this would really only be mostly speculation at this point, but I am really interested with what you said as far as how long, let's say the Kings did that, for example, like, it's different when a player does it versus a team. Like, there might be some kind of lingering effect for DeAndre down the road, like maybe a few GMs don't want to look in his direction if he's a free agent again or something like that, but it's obviously very different with a team. What would be the shelf life of kind of a negative image for, like, would it really cause you to lose a major foothold in your negotiating abilities if you did something like this? I'm just wondering what you thought about that.
I've given this a lot of thought, and I wrote a piece that never got published because it was kind of somewhere between a hot take and a modest proposal. But I was thinking about this, and first of all, I think that from looking at the Kings' standpoint, they would have to find a way to make good on their commitments to the free agents, because we're talking about like where people would have long memories would be, you know, agents negotiating with them. And if they made all the players who they you know, whole and signed the contracts they agreed to, which I think, especially with the cap kind of rising even more than we thought, I think with a little bit of kind of, you know, legerdemain and kind of using the stretch provision intelligently, I think they could get there without, you know, having to, you know, just by stretching Carl Andre, Jason Thompson. I think the math comes pretty close to working out. So that's one thing. Like, I think if they just kind of back out on the Sixers, remember that name. Then it's one thing. If they actually go back on players, then it's a whole other thing. And, you know, then we're, you know, then we're off to the races, and, you know, the position of the franchise might become untenable, to some degree. So that's one point. The second point is, you know, they have a little bit of a get-out-of-jail-free card from a reputational standpoint, because, you know, up until today, you know, was there any like, body in the NBA with a lower kind of perception of them than the Kings front office right now?
Probably not, but that's our perception of them. I think it's possible that other franchises probably view them as pretty stupid, but I don't know if other franchises necessarily view them as disingenuous or as dishonest, which I think might be a different thing as far as negotiating in the future.
Well, something with that is a few things. I've exchanged kind of communications with, you know, people I know with teams, and they've been laughing at you know, they've been the butt of jokes, like, what are these guys doing? And you know, people in the league are reacting to them the same way that, you know, we are outside of the league, because it's ridiculous. So that's one thing. Second thing is, you almost think that they would might, all right, well, at least, you know, they got some stones on them. They might, you know, that little bit of grudging respect kind of thing. And also the fact that it was Philadelphia, don't have a ton of friends, I think it's safe to say, given their kind of, and certainly don't have a ton of friends who would come to their defense if they complained about another team, you know, playing to the exact letter of the rule. You know, it's not if the chief defense of Philadelphia is, you know, this is how the rule's written. We haven't done anything against the rules with, you know, our roster construction stuff like that. Like, and so that's one thing. And the final point is, given where they are, is a timeout dealing with other teams. And I talked about this a little bit with Talk and Practice pod from today, but would kind of a quote timeout from dealing with other teams, is that a net negative for them right now while they're kind of still, their decision-making processes are questionable?
You might be right. It could be almost a blessing in disguise, as long as we assume sort of the long-term ill will doesn't last too long. And you're totally right with Philly. Philly, does, you know, they don't exactly have a leg to stand on as far as, you guys aren't obeying the spirit of the rule. Those guys can't say that to anybody. So
yeah.
I kind of see what you mean, and it would have been really and will be really interesting to see if that's something that even comes up in the conversations. I know Zach Lowe mentioned it as well. I think he was piggybacking off you, or you were piggybacking off him.
I was piggybacking off him. I think he I'm trying to remember who he was having a conversation. I think he was talking about it with Tom Zill.
Yeah. I was going to say it was Ziller. Yeah.
But it's something that's you know, it's just sitting there, and it's sitting there because of this ridiculous system that we have.
Yeah.
Where, and you know, the best arguments that kind of Dallas and supporters have to stand on is all of the actions taken, quote unquote, in reliance. I mean, it's kind of legal terminology now, but in reliance on DeAndre Green. And I don't think that actually holds up. But I don't want to take words out of your mouth, but I'm guessing that's what you're going to say, is that they've done all these other things and now that falls apart.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely do think that's one of the largest ethical issues with it. And I know I'm not as lawyerly as you, so you said you didn't think from that standpoint that might hold up.
I mean, you know, from a legal standpoint, I don't think Dallas has a leg to stand on. But even from almost an ethical standpoint, is he, like, we're holding DeAndre, and maybe I'm soapboxing here, but so be it. It's my podcast. we're holding DeAndre kind of, if hostage is probably the wrong word to use today, but I can't think of a better one right now, to a ridiculous system that allows all these decisions that can't actually be made to pile up on top of each other. So now he's, you know, I haven't actually agreed to this. I think I made a mistake. I still could get out of it, but I can't get out of it because of all these other things that shouldn't be allowed to happen have already happened. And he's having to bear the weight of that. And that's, you know, that's he's being made a martyr for the not necessarily a martyr, but he's being sacrificed to the, you know, the gods of the system when their system is ridiculous.
Which, you know, and yeah, of course, the end all answer here is that the system is stupid and needs to be changed. But within the confines of our understanding of the system, which everyone knows at this point, it's been operating this way for a long time. There have been examples of guys reneging on commitments and things like that, but they're extremely few and far between. And to me, it's more of an exception proving the rule type of thing. With everybody essentially being on a common ground for these things, at least I agree, you know, technically and by the legal letter of the law, there is really no recourse. But from an ethical standpoint, I do think that from DeAndre's position with, you know, he's not just operating by himself here. DeAndre's got people in his camp. He's got an agent. He's got, and not just an agent, he's got a lot of people around him whose jobs are to advise him. And whether or not what we think their ulterior motives might be, they can inform him of what the realities are of the situation. And I just think that it's unfortunate to see that I don't want to condemn him some terrible person. Like I said, people make, you know, they make bad decisions, they change their minds on things, especially when it's a huge decision like this where it's where he's going to live and play basketball for the next 4 or 5 years of his life. But I do think it's questionable, and I think it's worth criticizing him for at least.
And I think that's all fair, certainly. And, you know, I want to bring up is a situation, okay, maybe people don't actually go back on these offers, but a situation that happens, you know, I think with some frequency, and I'm going to struggle to find a specific example, but, you know, they've got all these deals lined up and they've got to happen in a certain order, and then we get the cap worked out, and then, oh man, we're coming to the last guy and we got our numbers wrong. Can we rework this deal a little bit? And when we rework this deal, it's never in the player's favor. And that,
right.
Again, off the top of my head, I can't come up with a specific example, but that's something that happens every single year. Do you think I'm off base by saying that?
No, I know exactly. I can't think of one really off the top either, but I know exactly what you're talking about, and those things definitely have happened. I think it's slightly different. Just because it's the player in that situation, the player, at least to me, there has to be some sort of inherent understanding that the player is helping the team out by waiting, or by, where, you know, you're talking about the type of thing where a restricted guy waits until all their other moves are done so that they can absorb him under the cap and not, or over the cap, excuse me, and not have to worry about it.
Or just the numbers don't work and say, hey, we're going to sign you 3.4. It's actually going to have to be 3.32. Sorry. And you know, and it somehow never ends up working out that it's going to be, you know, 3.45, because the bank did not, you know, unlike Monopoly, the bank does not make an error in your favor.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and I think the assumption would have to be, if the, you know, the player and, again, his agent, who is supposed to be well-versed in these sorts of things, if they come to an agreement with the team that, or, you know, a handshake, wink, wink, whatever, that we're gonna wait, or we're going to, you know, however the situation is going to play out, if you know that those dealings that the team is trying to do in the meantime are imprecise and they haven't been defined as far as the numbers yet, you have to know that that's a risk going in, that the numbers might shake out slightly different than you thought. Whereas with DeAndre here,
If I can break in, I'll just say that's a neat trick that works one way but not the other. And accepting the fact that, like, the magnitude of, just kidding, I'm not coming, is different than actually you're getting $100K less than we said we were going to give you. Those are categorically different things, and others, you know, I accept that.
Yeah.
But it's still, as with many things in kind of, you know, not to get into like labor economics and stuff like that, but as with many things, we're just playing hard here, and one side does it, and if the other side does it, it's you monster. And I'm not saying that's what you're saying. It's just let's remember what we're talking about here, that advantage is taken the other way in small doses all the time.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I mean, again, the answer in the end comes back to, this is a really stupid system and we should change it slightly, so, or perhaps majorly, so that so many options for either teams or players to kind of get screwed aren't really available. Now,
yeah.
I did want to say, just for any who are listening who might not know what the technical reason is for the moratorium existing, it's that the NBA's fiscal year ends on June 30th, and despite what you may think about accountants, accounting is a very, very difficult job, and it takes 8 or 9 days for them to actually get all the league's revenue reports and everything like that together. And that's why the moratorium exists. Now, I think the pretty easy one-step solution to that is just delay free agency by 8 or 9 days, which I don't think too many people would mind, would they? I mean, we wouldn't mind as writers because we get like 4 days in between the draft and free agency. I think everybody would be fine with an extra week or in a couple days or something like that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, no, and I think that the other thing is that, you know, that it's explicit in the CBA that they cannot reach oral agreements, yet all we've heard for the last week is they've reached agreements. So they're just kind of openly flouting the system. Like, if it's just going to be for negotiations and stuff like that, okay, fine. Like, let's understand that that's what we're talking about and not actually treat these as, you know, deals that are done when they can't be done. And that's
yeah, and it's the same with the draft, where you'll have teams essentially making wink-wink deals with their draft picks and things like that they can't actually finalize until July 1st.
Yeah, and it's, you know, and or guys getting, you know, a promise at the combine that, oh, you're not going to get past that at 16.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it, you know. And I don't know why you'd ever make such a promise or why you'd, you know, I guess it's trying to get people to not work out for, you know, teams ahead of you or something like that. I can't.
That's always extremely confused me, and especially when they leak it to the public. It's like, wait, so we're linking our intentions of our basketball organization where competitive advantage is pretty much everything. I've kind of always been confused by that, but I guess teams have their reasons for it.
Yeah. So I think we've, you know, there are, I think that, you know, I agree with you in principle that, you know, the way that it's certainly, using a favorite word of mine, it's suboptimal the way that DeAndre Jordan has gone about doing this, because you shouldn't make this enforceable, unenforceable or not. Like, you know, there's, you know, for the cliche of your word is your bond, my handshake is good enough, stuff like that. Like that stuff, you know, I think I would like to think as moral human beings that has some currency and that matters.
Yeah, and so that's, absolutely. And that's a big thing.
Yeah. And so that's, I think that's all fair. I mean, I know you have some thoughts on this as well.
I do. I've always been kind of, you know, for as jerkish as I can appear sometimes on Twitter to certain people, I have always been one of those people that takes that sort of stuff really seriously. Like, I'm big on your word and your human dignity, essentially. And I know that sounds silly to some people at a certain level, but to me, it's just kind of one of those things. And if it was me and I was in DeAndre's situation, I really, honestly, I know it sounds kind of nuts, but I really, even if I felt I had made the wrong decision, I still would have gone through with the decision that I made, especially as a guy who, you know, your life is not actually going to be all that awful, still living in a place where you're, a nice place where you're paid an exorbitant amount of money to play a game that you really enjoy playing. Like, I know that simplifies that issue to a large degree, but honestly, probably my biggest issue with the whole thing was the whole thing was an issue, but as the day wore on, why didn't – and maybe you did. I guess maybe we didn't hear the reports. But why – if you've made your decision and you've changed your mind and whatever, just be a man and face up to it and call the Mavericks or Mark Cuban or whoever. Just call them and tell them, guys, sorry, I'm out. Like, I'm staying in my house with the Clippers today, and then I'm going to re-sign with them tonight at midnight. Like, why could he not have just done that instead of it's something that I believe you retweeted, Amin El-Hassan – went on a little bit of a not a rant, but a diatribe on Twitter about all the other people that this is affecting within an organization. And even if it affects all those people for an extra 12 hours or an extra 24 hours, whatever, it's still affecting them. And to me, that was kind of one of the parts that irked me the most, is you're so gutless that – sorry, I don't mean to make the guy sound horrible, but you don't have sort of the stones to just give the guys a call and say, I've changed my mind, I apologize, this is what's happening.
Now, there's two things going on here. One, I agree with the sentiment of what you're saying, and at the same time, like, and we've kind of had this discussion privately before. I think the language used matters here, And yes, you would, the way one would hope you would conduct yourself as a professional, as an adult, as a moral human being is like, I screwed up. Sorry, this is where we are, and that would be the end of it. That's not what happened here, and you know, I'm sure at some point we'll find out, you know, why it didn't happen that way. Whether it was, you know, I just don't want to talk to him, or you know, I can't trust my agent who's going to be on the call. Which, you know, not knowing the specifics, that seems in play here at least. I think,
yeah.
Given the widely reported relationship between you know Dan Fagan and Mark Cuban, you know, yes. At the same time, when you start using language like stones and be a man, that implies that kind of in everyday life, people handle
yeah.
themselves optimally. People handle themselves like in a morally, you know, morally erect way. That's the wrong word, but whatever, I'm going with it. all the time. And, you know, it's a, you know, every single person who's like criticizing him for that has done stuff. They've been passive aggressive. They've not returned a phone call they didn't want to have. You know, they've broken up with a girlfriend by just not by no longer communicating. You know,
I've never done that. What are you talking
okay.
about?
Okay. so it's, you know, let's not make this like, it's not a childish behavior. It's not a lack of adulthood. It's moral rectitude. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you. It's not bad. It's being a flawed human being. And you can certainly criticize like the decision making and how he handled it. And yes, for the reasons you suggested, and Amin El-Hassan, who's been in this position before on the other end when he works for the Suns, not as a media member. You know, for those reasons, yes, that would be the best way to handle it. And you would absolutely criticize him for not doing it that way. But, you know, he's not a child who needs, you know, how one acts explained to him, which if people who listen to this podcast know I've been kind of on a language kick anyway. And that's, you know, when you think about that, that's very much I know better. You have to be instructed in these things, even though you're 26 and an adult and blah, 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 you know?
Yeah. And that's all totally fair. And I said before, I fell into that trap for a second or two. I sent a couple tweets that, like you said, the language police probably would have been out on them, had everybody else not been sending completely
right.
outlandish tweets at the time. But,
right.
Well, and one thing, if we have time, real quick, that I wanted to mention that you mentioned there was the agent relationship. And I do think this is a pretty interesting dynamic of this whole thing. You know, the reports were that Dan Fagan was not with DeAndre today. I'm not sure if there were any further as to what their communication was or what Fagan's opinion was or anything like that. Do you find it somewhat interesting that this whole thing sort of took place independently of him? And does it maybe suggest that he was doing a little more pushing in one direction or the other in the first place than we may have been led to believe?
I mean, that's an obvious inference to draw. I don't think either of us have any actual information to speak
yeah.
to that, but it's, I mean, that if we learn that, you know, and we're going to hear all kinds of spin because, I mean, if we know one thing, it's that Doc Rivers is very good with the media. So the Clippers side of the story is going to be told. The
yeah.
pro Clippers, pro DeAndre side of the story is going to be told, you know, fully. And, you know, it's not necessarily believe everything we read on that front because it's going to, you know, rose-tinted glasses are going to be worn. writing that particular version of things. But, no, I think that's a, you know, it's a, let's put it this way. If on Monday he's like, you know, I didn't actually, I'm not wild about this, actually, you know, you do have to wonder how much, you know, he was being pushed by someone who, you know, has maybe conflicting or other or just, you know, a different set of priorities. And that's where, and certainly, as a reformed attorney myself, that's very worrisome because that's like, you want to talk about ethically suspect. Like if you're representing someone, you're not supposed to tell them what to do. they're supposed to tell you what they want you to do for them, and then that's that. And then you go and execute that plan. And
yeah,
that,
I
and to the extent that that relationship is inverted, that's a problem.
I think we're towing that line pretty often in the NBA today. I can't necessarily speak to any concrete examples of that, but I think if you were to delve into that that whole thing, which I think the agents don't want anybody to be delving into that particular world. But it's the whole thing is a really intriguing issue, and I would expect that something will be done about the moratorium. You have to think, you know, the example I brought up at the start of the podcast is obviously unrealistic, but there are a bunch of ramifications, at least down those same lines vaguely, that you could come to if you just allow this to continue as it is. You're like you've said, you're basically fostering an environment where stuff like this is bound to happen.
Yeah, and I mean, I got to think that people at the league are on the phone with everybody tonight saying, all right, no more of this is happening. Because, you know, you got to think that, you know, whether it's Sacramento, their trade, whether it's if you're Wes Matthews and you just signed with Dallas, I signed with a team that was set up to be okay. Maybe I want the more money if I'm going to be on a team that's going to be bad. Maybe I want the more money in Sacramento, kind of thing. I don't even want to suggest that that's what Wes Matthews is thinking. But I mean, it wouldn't you know, surprise you now that the doors are open if everyone is kind of saying, well, actually, maybe, what can we do here? And
it's always people always, the first person in any situation who does the sort of morally suspect thing, it becomes okay for everybody to kind of do that afterwards, because it's like, well, that guy did it. What's the difference?
The first guy went in the water and the shark didn't get him, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
I have to figure that there's some intense kind of lobbying going on within the league right now, and kind of thought right away that I think it was the Hornets had their contract signed at 12:01, you know, doing the press conference later tomorrow, but we have our contract signed now. It was either the Hornets or the Pelicans. I can't remember. It came across on Twitter.
Oh, well, that was the first joke that everybody came with as soon as this started breaking. Jody Gennessy, a Jazz beat writer, tweeted something about the Jazz are keeping Joe Ingles in a discreet Australian location until July 9th begins, something like that.
Yeah. So, yeah, and you got to think that this is maybe something that the union and the league can get together on. Let's change this process. Let's clean this up and say, all right, you have to have the moratorium for the purpose. And the other part about the moratorium that's ridiculous, by the way, is all these negotiations were going on and nobody knew how much money they had to spend.
Yeah.
All of a sudden the cap comes in today, and, you know, not only that, not everyone knew how much they'd signed for. Because the cap determines the max and stuff like that.
Exactly.
So it's like, you know, it's ridiculous. That's batty. That's like, how can you have any kind of market if no one knows what they have to spend? So, let's clean this up so that, you know, yes, you can talk. Let's cut down on the nod, nod, wink, wink stuff. And, you know, at least give us some plausible deniability here. That way no one's ever going to be able to make the argument, well, you screwed us because we had all these other things that we couldn't actually have lined up.
I don't even know if that would be my argument. Might be to just straight up say no communication of any kind until the moratorium ends, and that's when you can begin signing players. That's when you can begin talking to guys. As far as little minutia like summer league participation and certain but that there's already guys that are allowed to play summer league before they officially agree to contracts or before they assign contracts, anything like that. I think it'd be a pretty simple fix, and more than that, I there are a lot of issues that you worry about collective bargaining, where you worry there's going to be pushback from one side or the other. I'm just not sure I see what the major pushback would be here from either side. I think both have to realize that sure, this was wildly entertaining as a day, but I think both sides here kind of came out with some egg on their face overall as a result of what happened.
Yeah, no, it's I think everyone looks a bit ridiculous today. I think ourselves included, as kind of
yeah.
the rapacious media hordes. But I don't care because it was amazing and fun, and you know, I was glad the parts people were able to have fun with. And also, I should say that for the Mavs fans, you do feel bad because it sucks. It sucks to be the
oh,
one
absolutely.
Who. It sucks to be the one that, you know, was you know, the music stopped and they're the ones who didn't have the chair when the music was going to stop at some point because the system demanded it.
Well, not only that, they thought they had a chair. In fact, the chair was in their hands. And then at the very last second, somebody kicked one of the legs out from underneath it or something like that. It was a little more brutal than that even. I feel bad for Dirk personally because he took so much less money over the last couple of years to try and build a contender, and now that plan has kind of just fallen to shit. And I'm not necessarily saying that DeAndre was the make or break title piece for them. I don't think they were title contenders with DeAndre, but you still have to feel kind of bad for, you know, he's probably near the end here, only got a year or two left.
Yeah, no, and that's true. But I mean, if you also think about it, he's in, you know, I guess he's in somewhat worse shape, but really by the time DeAndre decided, DeAndre was the last kind of major domino to fall. So
that's true.
If you know, realistically, if he makes this decision the other way up front, who are they, who do they have to go after then? Like, they,
for fans long term, it could have been slightly better because maybe then in that case they don't get Matthews.
Yeah.
And then actually their path to the eventual tank rebuild is possibly a little easier, which fans don't want to hear that with Dirk still on the roster right now, but it might have kind of been the reality of things. Whereas
yeah.
assuming that West keeps his word, which I think there were reports today that he would, and that whole thing, assuming that's what happens, they might kind of be stuck in that middle where you sort of don't want to be. But at the same time, that might have happened anyway. Dirk by himself is generally worth several wins on his own, so it's hard to speculate.
Yeah, no, and you do feel bad for them, and you know, kind of the things that have annoyed me about kind of the discourse around this. You know, I'm totally willing to give them, you know, specifically Mavs fans a pass for, because you know they're emoting. This is disappointing. You can't expect them to all see the big picture. The big picture is they got screwed. You know, like everyone else is operating under one system, and they're the ones that get held to the letter of the law, and that's no fun. You know, that's
yeah.
So you know, I think we've actually kind of agreed more than I thought we were going to. I was ready for even more fiery Ben than we got.
I toned myself down over the last, like, if you had gotten me 2 hours ago when we were engaging on Twitter, it might have been a little bit more fiery Ben. But when you stop and think about it for a while, you realize, like, to us, these may seem like simple things, but to someone like DeAndre Jordan, this is his life. Like,
exactly.
This is what's going to happen for the next 4 or 5 years of his life. And I would, you know, if somebody told me, hey, Ben, you've got, you know, not that anybody actually necessarily told DeAndre, you've only got a week to make this decision, but if somebody told me this summer is when you're deciding basically what's going to happen for the next several years of your life, and there's a ton of just completely unknown elements involved with this, regardless of my situation and how wealthy I was or how whatever, that would make me nervous, and there's a chance that I might make a bad decision.
And if you made a decision, but the decision wasn't final, and you were worried if you made the right decision or not, you might, you know, you maybe not. I mean, we've seen that in the NBA. I mean, you know, something that got talked about a little today is, like, you know, a couple of years ago, Billy Donovan agreed to coach the Magic, was introduced as the Magic coach, and then, like, never mind, you know?
Yeah.
And that's maybe instructive for people who say that, you know, DeAndre's reputation is forever in tatters. Billy Donovan got a plum coaching job this summer, and, you know, it's a couple of years later, but, you know, we have short memories, you know. Someone is going to knock DeAndre off the front page at some point, and, you know, it'll be remember that thing that happened at some point. Maybe not this year.
It'll probably happen tomorrow when LeBron decides to sign, or, you know, whenever.
With Dallas.
Oh, my God. Seriously.
That would be amazing. Since I've bent you to my will a little bit on the main topic, I suppose it's only fair that I give you a chance to wax poetic about the prospects of your Jazz for this coming season to you know completely switch gears. I think that they're you know talking about up and, teams that look like they're up and coming this year. It's the Jazz and the Magic, and you know the Jazz are going to be a better team, but playing in the West, so who knows which one's going to be better. But as a close follower of the Jazz, what do you think?
I definitely am encouraged. I want to, you know, like I'm trying to be as objective as I can because I cover the team. I've been a fan since I was 9, but I cover the team. So you want to try and stay kind of as detached emotionally as you can. And in that respect, I'm kind of trying to limit my how far I want to go with my level of encouragement. But that said, there's a lot to go on, honestly, and not the least of which is, and I know insanely small sample size theater and it was a summer league game and all that, but the way Dante Exum looked on Monday night, playing specifically against Marcus Smart, who is not only an NBA-level defender, but is also a guy that has tormented Exum in the past when they've played, going all the way back to the FIBA U19s. Exum took him apart for basically the entire second quarter on in that game until Exum went down with an ankle injury at the end, but it doesn't look to be too serious. If he makes, you know, the Jazz's big issue last year for anyone paying attention was their point guard play. It was really, really weak between Exum and Trey Burke, who's one of the worst point guards playing regular rotation minutes in the NBA currently. And if Exum were able to sustain this sort of thing, which of course is no certainty, if he were, though, it raises the potential ceiling for the Jazz a lot because they really are kind of set everywhere else. There's not a whole lot lacking on the roster anywhere else. They've got a very solid wing rotation with Gordon Hayward. They've got Alec Burks returning from injury. Rodney Hood has been pretty spectacular since about January, at least as far as rookies go. He looks like another huge steal for the Jazz at the 23rd pick. And then they've got Gobert and Favors anchoring the front line there with Trevor Booker coming off the bench, who's been, I think, pretty underappreciated around the league. He's been really good. You never know what a guy like Trey Lyles is going to offer or how their depth is going to turn out. But, you know, there is a lot of upside to like here, and they've got an excellent coach, an excellent front office that are in tandem with each other. I'm pretty excited that I get to be covering the team now, actually, because now is kind of the launch pad for what could be a pretty exciting half decade or so.
So, obviously, I mean, as a, you know, someone who would like to see the Jazz do well, whether as a fan or kind of the potential of covering playoff games, I imagine. Selfishly, you can't be too upset with that aspect of today. I mean, it's cold, but if you know, things move on, and I think that the Mavs' playoff chances took a big hit today. And you know,
yeah.
You know, when you know, a door closes, another opens. Well, guess who's outside the next door? If I can, you know, beat a metaphor into dust. So, yeah, what do you think? Playoff chances, 50-50, better, worse?
I have settled right about 50-50 for the moment, pending kind of just what happens the rest of the summer, definitely how Exum looks. Exum is the biggest variable at this point. You know, his play is going to kind of, if he's as bad as he was last year, for example, I would say the chances go well down below 50%, assuming they don't make a trade or bring in any other point guards. I do think the news today probably, as you know, selfishly for the Jazz, did help them a little bit, because I think the general assumption is that even had they lost DeAndre, the Clippers were probably still a little better than the Jazz, just with Blake and Chris Paul and the rest of the guys they've got there, who are, you know, they had some thin spots, but they've still got two of the best 15 players in the league. That I think they still probably would have been favorites to be better than the Jazz unless one of those guys was seriously injured at any point. And now the Clippers are definitely favored to be better than the Jazz, but at the same time, it almost basically seems impossible at this point that the Mavericks are, which puts the Jazz kind of squarely in that conversation for trying to get the 7th or the 8th seed there with, you know, New Orleans, potentially, who am I forgetting? I'm forgetting somebody else that's around that area. Phoenix.
New Orleans, Phoenix. I mean, obviously, Oklahoma City is going to be, you know, better this year. I mean, you know, Denver has talent. Maybe things go better with you know, a non-toxic kind of coaching situation for them. Maybe Minnesota is the team that pulls in Milwaukee. I mean, that's going crazy, I think. But
Maybe a little. I think Minnesota's a little bit too young, and I don't actually think Denver really quite. I agree the situation will be better for them, but I just don't think they have the talent to compete with a team like the Jazz necessarily.
I mean, if you look at their roster, I mean, there's a lot of ifs. Like, you know, if Gallinari is healthy, if Lawson's head is on, you know, and he's in engaged with the team and not in the doghouse or whatever, and if Nurkic, you know, is healthy and makes a year of progress, and if. It's a lot of ifs to string together, but you can see how when you do, it's like, it's not a, all right, yeah, they got some dudes there. Again,
I might be willing to go there in the East. I don't know about in the West.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know your opinion of him. Kenny Freed's not my favorite player, but, you know, maybe.
He's not mine either. He's definitely not mine either. I think we have similar opinions as far as the evolving modernity of the game, if you will.
Yeah.
And Kenneth Faried doesn't necessarily fit in with that so well.
Yeah. So anyway, that's so what are you you're headed to Summer League next week. I'm leaving tonight, actually. But are you are the Jazz even sending a team to Vegas Summer League, or are they just doing okay. So that's,
no, they're sending a team, and they're, I think, as far as what we're being told, a few of the important guys may even continue to play in Vegas. Like Rodney Hood last night in his post game, he said he's, as far as he's been informed, he's playing in Vegas, even though he's essentially proven through two games here in Utah Summer League that he just doesn't, he's too good for this. He doesn't belong on this court at this point. But and then I think we'll see Exum again, assuming that his ankle's back to full health. They're obviously not going to risk anything with him. And then the more exciting thing for the Jazz is they finally got Trey Lyles signed. There was a bit of a weird thing there for a couple of days. I don't know if that made it all the way to national headlines or not. Effectively, there was Rich Paul is Trey Lyles' agent. That's the same agent as LeBron James. And he was effectively holding Lyles out of Summer League participation due to some vague and undisclosed contractual issues, which is weird for a rookie because rookie contracts are almost always just completely standard. Right.
Yeah.
You know, 120% of the rookie availability. And for whatever reason that he was held out a couple games. But now the news is that he'll probably get a few minutes tomorrow night here in Utah, and then he'll be on full time in Vegas. And I think Jazz fans are pretty excited to see what he can potentially be. I came into the draft really lukewarm on him. In fact, really down on him, and was kind of upset at first when the Jazz made a pick. But with a little bit further research, I'm still not convinced yet, but I definitely can see the area they were going for. And if he hits some of his check boxes, he's going to make them extremely versatile to where they can shift from those huge Gobert and Favors lineups down to playing really only one traditional big, because in many ways Lyles can function kind of as a wing who's big enough to play in a big body, if you will.
Sure.
He could be one of those sort of playmaking four types that Zach Lowe coined a little while back, if, of course, everything works out developmentally for him.
And that's, you know, history says that expecting any of that this year is you know, good luck with that. Because, but you just kind of want to see flashes of that this year and then, you know, headed forward kind of more than anything
right.
else.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let me see. We probably went about 45 minutes, and good talking to you and checking in with you on the eve of Summer League for an emergency kind of DeAndre wrapped down edition.
Yeah.
So, and thanks for talking with me, and I think I'll see you next week.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on. I'll be in on Monday the 13th. I'll be getting there.
All right. See you then.
All right. Awesome. Thanks, Evan.